14 minutes to 8, you are listening to Sabah al-Muslim Drive Time on Radio Islam International. We spoke earlier on about the rhetoric heating up between both North Korea and the US. Donald Trump's administration threatening military action against North Korea. They saying that, look, if that happens, then they could look at a preemptive strike. And we know there's this whole concern about the nuclear powers that they have. And the big question revolves around China. Will China intervene? Now, there's a history between China and Korea. And China also doesn't want to be just seen as appeasing the U.S. or doing things because pressure is being exerted by the U.S. Will China intervene? How will they intervene? What will be their objective if they intervene? Now, we are joined this morning on the line by Salvatore Babones, an associate professor at the University of Sydney and a regular contributor to At Foreign Affairs and At National Interest. He's a specialist in global economic structure, and he has written on this very question, will China intervene in North Korea? He joins us this morning on the line from Sydney in Australia. Salvatore, thank you so much for your time. Good morning and welcome to Radio Islam International.
Oh, good afternoon. Thank you for having me on the program.
Will all this rhetoric flying around currently, will it result in China intervening in North Korea, or do the Chinese work very differently?
Well, I think that depends what we mean by intervene. I certainly don't think that a Chinese invasion of North Korea is imminent or anything like that. But China has already intervened to exert pressure on the North Korean regime. For example, by cutting off coal imports from North Korea, by cutting off civil aviation connections with North Korea, and putatively by moving troops to the North Korean border. Now, that's unconfirmed. We don't know that for certain, but there's a lot of citizen journalism that suggests that there have been troop movements in northeastern China towards the North Korean border.
What's so different now about what North Korea is doing compared to what it has done, say, 10 years ago or 20 years ago that brings this this big question back into the picture?
Or we could even say what they did 1 year ago. Let's not forget that they conducted two bomb tests in 2016. The big difference isn't North Korea. The big difference, as with many things today, is Donald Trump. The difference is with Trump in the White House instead of Obama in the White House, there's a much more assertive United States foreign policy, whereas Barack Obama, I think, was willing to live and let live with North Korea, to treat North Korea as some kind of naughty child who, you know, needed a stern talking to, perhaps. Donald Trump is, of course, much more eager to assert his credentials, to show that he has what it takes to be president. He is new in office. He was elected as a minority president, you know, by a minority vote in the popular vote. And I think he's very keen to show who's boss. And if we know anything about Donald Trump, it's that Donald Trump likes to be the boss.
Why do they do these nuclear testing, or these missile tests, rather? Is it just to get attention?
Many of us think that the biggest audience for North Korea's missile tests and nuclear tests isn't actually us and the rest of the world. The biggest audience is North Korea's own people. I think the Kim Jong-un regime in North Korea doesn't have a lot to say for itself. It doesn't have a lot to show for its efforts. You know, it has to prove to the people of North Korea that it actually is powerful, actually is doing something. And you know, I think these tests, which are plastered all over North Korean propaganda, are really to prove for the regime, to prove to itself and to prove to its own people that it is a powerful, important country in the world. I mean, for example, I think it's very telling that North Korea always insists it wants to negotiate directly with the United States. Yeah. Now, you know, North Korea is a small, poor country in Northeast Asia. It should be negotiating with South Korea. You know, they share a language, they're neighbors, they both say they hope for eventual reunification. So how come they don't want to talk to South Korea? They want to talk to the United States. Well, the reason is that North Korean leaders in the past, and including Kim Jong-un today, want nothing more than to be taken seriously as important world leaders. And unfortunately for them, they're just never going to get that the way they've been behaving.
Now, I've read your piece that you wrote for Al Jazeera, and I found that the history part of it very interesting in terms of China and right. Korea. In a nutshell, can you give our listeners some insight in that regard?
Well, the history between China and North Korea goes back a long way. If you go back to the Song Dynasty and the ancient Chinese dynasties, China was often an aggressor in Korea. But ever since the Ming Dynasty, which is the 1500s, ever since the Ming Dynasty, China has actually been a defender of North Korea. And in fact, China defended Korea against a Japanese invasion in 1593. And then it defended Korea against a Japanese invasion 400 years later, in 1894. Then again in 1951, of course, we had the Korean War, which could be seen as China defending North Korea against the U.S. and the United Nations forces. It's interesting that in all three of those wars, the Korea-Japan War of the 1590s, the Sino-Japanese War of the 1890s, and then again in 1951, in all three wars, the line between China and the invaders stabilized right south of Pyongyang. That is, Seoul was on the foreigner side and Pyongyang was on the Chinese side. And in all three wars, they defended Pyongyang with Chinese troops against foreign aggression. So there's a real spirit, I think, in China that China is the defender of North Korea against outsiders and has been for 500 years.
So is it because it serves China's interest where North Korea becomes a kind of buffer for China's borders in terms of Japanese or Western colonialism?
Well, that's the real politics of it. But that real politics is also backed up by passion. I mean, Chinese citizens have beliefs and passions and desires just as much as citizens of any other country. And I think many Chinese citizens and even Chinese politicians see North Korea as, part of the world that looks to China for help and defense. It's not just all realpolitik for them. Now, that said, of course, China wants to keep U.S. Forces as far away from the Chinese border as possible. And I think they look at the example of Eastern Europe, where after 1991, first Germany reunified, and then the border between NATO and Russia was pushed farther and farther east until now NATO is right on the borders of Russia, 1,000 miles farther east than it was in the 1980s. And I think China sees the same possibility in Korea. They certainly don't want a reunification of Korea under the government in Seoul.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about North Koreans themselves? I mean, if we go by the reports that we are exposed to, we would come to the conclusion that they are very oppressed, that they are suffering, that they have a ruler like Kim Jong-un. But then you kind of see these clips on CNN, for example, where you see people wearing bright colored clothing and smiling. Is that part of propaganda or are people really suffering in North Korea?
The only honest answer is we just don't know. We know that there was serious suffering in the 1990s when there was a real famine, but we should remember that even when there was a serious famine in North Korea, there was no revolution. There was no Korean Spring like the Arab Spring. So even when people have been suffering severely in North Korea, they haven't risen up against the regime. Now, whether that's because of extreme repression or if that's because of education and brainwashing, or that's because people actually like the regime, I think it's impossible for any of us on the outside to say. Of course, when we talk to defectors tell us that everybody hates the regime. But of course, we're talking to defectors, so people who have fled North Korea. Now, what we can say for certain is that North Korea is very much a police state. And that's true even when you visit northeastern China, and you meet North Koreans who are in China. Even they are very guarded. They're very monitored. The Chinese tell you, don't talk to them directly because they're not allowed to talk to you. Even North Koreans in China. I've never met North Koreans in Korea, but even in China, the North Koreans are very guarded about talking to foreigners because they believe that the secret police will be watching them.
So just to conclude then, Salvatore, coming back to the initial point, there isn't a likely intervention in a military sense by China. There probably would be quiet diplomacy or a kind of steel arm in a velvet glove approach?
Well, if you'd asked me a week ago, I would have said that the possibility of an intervention was real. I think the only reason China would actually send troops into North Korea is if they believe the United States is going to. Mm-hmm. So if they believe the United States was about to attack North Korea, I think China would step in first. Because even though everybody talks about North Korea's powerful military and the threat to Seoul and potential nuclear weapons, I think all military analysts are agreed that North Korea is a paper tiger. The North Korean military is not capable of defending itself against South Korea, the United States, or China. And I think Chinese forces are ready to step in if there's trouble, if there's unrest. Now, I think it's very telling that there has not been another nuclear test in North Korea. And I think the big reason is that China threatened North Korea. If there is, we're going to do something about it.
All right. Salvador, thank you so much for your time this morning. It was fascinating talking to you.
Great. Thanks for having me on the program.
Have a great day. Go well.